another slice of Celtic history. What is it that makes James Edward McGrory one of, if not the, greatest ever Celts? Is it the incredible 550 goals in 547 career appearances? Maybe it's a club record 50 league goals in season 1935-36. Or perhaps it is the 8 goals he bagged in the 9-0 destruction of Dunfermline in January 1928. The truth is, statistics, even those as incredible as these, can never fully explain why this humble man from the Garngad holds such a unique place in the hearts of the Celtic support. You see, it is the rare qualities of McGrory the man, rather than just those of McGrory the player, that ensure Jimmy will be an eternal Celtic hero. These many qualities included a sense of loyalty and decency that personified the founding principles of the club he played for and loved. And never were these qualities more evident than in the summer of 1928. It was then that McGrory set off with his Celtic manager Willie Maley on a pilgrimage to the Catholic shrine in the French town of Lourdes. Like his manager, McGrory was devout and sincere in his faith. But as the train eased out of Central Station, little did Jimmy realise that the journey ahead would prove to be more about his devotion to Celtic than to his religion. From Glasgow, the train travelled the long journey to London, where the men were set to stay overnight before catching a boat train to Dover the following morning. Some 10 hours after leaving Scotland, the train finally arrived at Euston Station. As the Celtic party stepped onto the platform, they awaited, amongst the steam and whistles of a busy station, a surprise welcoming party. At least it was a surprise to a bemused McGrory. Waiting for Maley and Jimmy were two prosperous looking gentlemen, Herbert Chapman and Sir Samuel Hill Wood, the manager and chairman of Arsenal Football Club. Chapman would have needed little introduction to any football follower. He had already established himself as one of the foremost figures in the English game by taking Huddersfield Town to 2 league titles. He had been tempted away from his native Yorkshire in the summer of 1925 by the ambitious Gunners. Under the Machiavellian leadership of then chairman Sir Henry Norris, Arsenal had been a club going places, literally. Tory MP Norris was the man responsible for relocating the Gunners from their original Woolwich home and taking them north to Highbury. A man of dubious influence and persuasion, Norris used all of his political skills to ensure Arsenal were elected to England's first division in 1919, despite them having finished their last second division campaign in fifth place. By the time Maley and McGrory set off on their pilgrimage to Lourdes, Norris had been found guilty by the FA of illegal payments to players, and he was no longer part of the hierarchy of a London club. But his sense of ruthless ambition remained. Chapman was now a dominant personality at Highbury, and his desire to turn Arsenal into the force in English football was ferocious. Importantly, the Gunners had the wealth to match this ambition. Only the best would do for Chapman, and when it came to scoring goals, they didn't come any better than Jimmy. Arsenal had recently lost in the FA Cup final to Cardiff, but Chapman now believed, on the broad shoulders of McGrory, his Gunners could be carried to the very top. After pleasantries between the Arsenal and Celtic parties were exchanged, they moved from the sooty grime of the platform to the plush surrounds of the neighbouring Euston Hotel. As the group took their seats in the hotel's grand restaurant, the modest and naive McGrory remained totally unaware of the purpose of this unexpected meeting. Following their meal, the group retired to a lounge, with the exception of Chapman and Jimmy. Now alone with his prey, Chapman set about the task of convincing McGrory to swap his native Glasgow for life in London. But his promises of riches and a life of luxury failed to seduce. Like all those brought up in the Garngad, Jimmy was no stranger to poverty. Football had made him comfortable, but it was not a love of money that fueled the fire within this ghost-goring machine. It was something much more than that, something that Chapman and London could never offer him. The pure pleasure of wearing the hoops of his beloved Celtic. A frustrated Chapman could not comprehend McCrory's nonchalant resistance to what he believed was not just an enticing offer, but one which should have been simply irresistible. Jimmy was now aware the Gunners' manager was not going to take no for an answer. So to bring the matter to a conclusion, he told Chapman that he would require a signing on fee of £2,000. This was an astronomical amount, and a figure that McGrory calculated would be beyond even the financial reach of Arsenal. Mainly, with the Celtic board had already agreed a British record transfer fee of £8,000, returned to the dining room in the expectation that Chapman had got his man. But it was now McGrory's turn to spring a surprise, and Mailey was stunned when his Arsenal counterpart informed him that no deal could be agreed. The Arsenal party bid farewell, and after a night's rest, Mailey and McGrory continued on their journey to the south of France. Throughout the remainder of their pilgrimage, neither man mentioned a single word about Arsenal or Chapman. However, Chapman was not a man to accept defeat. The Celtic board wanted money to rebuild a stadium, which was, to their deep regret, no longer the premier sporting venue in Scotland. In contrast, the only rebuilding work Chapman had planned was on the field. So the Yorkshireman set up yet another ambush on the unsuspecting McGrory. As the train drew into London on the return journey to Glasgow, there, yet again, stood the waiting Chapman. McGrory was shocked, and this time, even Mailey seemed to be taken by surprise. The party again headed to the Houston Hotel. The eager Chapman was in the mood for business. He now offered Celtic a £10,000 transfer fee and, producing a blank cheque from his pocket, told Jimmy to name his price. In typically polite fashion, McGrory thanked Chapman for his trouble, and although flattered, he insisted he would not be leaving the boys. Finally, Chapman realised he was beat. Here was that rarest of creatures, a man who could not be bought. Mailey, who had left the room to allow the player and Chapman to negotiate a deal, returned to find a forlorn Arsenal manager. Yet again, McCrory had surprised him. He had not succumbed to Arsenal's seduction. Mailey shook hands with Chapman and said, "I'm very sorry, Mr. Chapman." The Highbury chief replied, "Not as sorry as me, Mr. Mailey." McGrory would later explain his decision in the simplest of terms. He said, "McGrory of Arsenal just never sounded as good as McGrory of Celtic." A centre forward returned home a contented man. He had enjoyed his first visit to Lourdes, but more importantly, he was still a Celtic man. His joy, however, was not shared by the Celtic board. Their antics in trying to sell McGrory were shameful, but what they did next was unforgivable. McGrory had turned down a fortune because his heart was Celtic's. His decision to turn his back on an unprecedented offer from a club on the verge of dominating English football was not based on a professional loyalty, but on a deep-rooted and unfaltering love for Celtic. Sir Robert Kelly said of McGrory, "No one ever played harder so often for Celtic." Yet, in a disgraceful act that defies reason, the board rewarded his heroic servant by secretly paying him less than his teammates for his remaining 9 seasons at Parkhead. In that gracious and dignified manner, which McGrory's trademark, he said of his foul injustice, "Sure it was worth it, just to put on that hooped jersey so many times."